Okay, welcome back. This hour will be part three of our conversation with the remarkable Russ Dizdar. Russ has been involved with ritual satanic abuse, trying to break people free of its evil clutches. And again, as we've been discussing, the people involved with this in most cases have no idea. And as he said last night, there have been people all the way from waiters and waitresses, law enforcement, to people in the world of physics. Is that right, Russ?
Oh, absolutely. We sure have engaged in deep discussion with a number, and there's some out there that are extremely versed, educated, graduated, PhDs, all the rest, and in every field, Jeff, every field.
These people are tortured and tormented at levels that they never really fully can wrap their minds around. They have almost instant and radical mood changes or personality changes. They often live entire lives of quiet desperation, depression. Many of them end up as early suicides. They can never quite get it all together. And it's no wonder. It is a horrible thing. And I'm wondering about also those who are around the ritual satanic abuse survivors, the multiple personalities, those who are tormented. What about those who have relationships with them, who are related to them, siblings, who work with them very, very closely, who are associates and so forth, in love with them? They are also victims of this horrible ritual satanic abuse cult.
Absolutely. I mean, this is what we've seen when it comes to, married individuals. Many of the victims that came to us in the 80s, 90s, they're married, they have kids, and when all of a sudden, in their late 30s and 40s, they're coming up with the memories, they're trying to break free, they're trying to realize, or the parents who were involved or whoever was involved begin to die off, then they want to find out, and they don't know what's going on, then guess who pays the price? The spouse, the other kids around, the people around them, they're at times they can't even work because they don't know, their whole world is crumbling, and then it does affect everybody around them.
Exactly. And the idea of someone who has been victimized by the cult dealing with all of this, and then, as you say, trying perhaps to find a way out, or at least becoming more aware of the fact that there are tremendous conflicts within, this can present to a spouse an imponderable situation. What in the world is wrong with my husband? What in the world is wrong with my wife? Why does my spouse immediately go into a rage, an angry spell, become very happy? Why the personality changes? Why the spouse, in many cases, or the friend, the associate, they don't know that there are multiples in there. They just don't know. There's no way for them to know.
Correct. And we've had to see over the years where a husband, and usually it's the husband, because normally in these cases, there's more women that are involved in this, abuse, but there's also guys. They end up, Jeff, in prisons many times, whereas the ladies, the women, are ended up in psych wards and so forth, because when they do begin to break down, they just think they're going crazy. The good news is, when I sit down with them, one of the first things I say, you're not going crazy, you're not insane. Mm-hmm. We need to look into seeing what occurred to you. Let's take time. And then a little bit of light is shed. Then they begin to understand. Then the dots are connected. Then the healing process, and the further we can get in, the more healing, understanding. In the very beginning, it's bad. It's bad in the very beginning.
It's almost impossible for a marriage to survive, I would think, in many of these cases. Now, you've got one or the other who is a victim, a multiple. And I've read a little bit about this, and it often leads to alcoholism, pharmaceutical misuse and abuse, because the people are trying desperately to get away from the pain, the anxiety, the fear. They don't know what's causing it. They can't get a handle on it. And so they try to anesthetize themselves. Is that also correct?
Exactly. I mean, that's, you know, they got to escape. That helps them to blank out any memories coming in. Because, see, if it's real, and that's why we always say the proof's in the pudding. If it's really there, then it's like beach balls under the water. Once you start moving your hand away from holding it down, they start to come up. So If it's really there, it begins to come up. It's real stuff. And then, of course, they freak out. They drugs, alcohol, whatever, food, anything to try to hold those toxic memories and ab reactions and all the rest, try to hold them down.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very hard.
And the associate, the friend, the spouse who tries to help, often with no knowledge of what's going on, runs into a wall of absolute frustration, mystery, anguish, agony. This has got to cause untold grief. We think of the one individual, the RSA abuse victim, but all families, friends who don't know. And they start to think, well, is this person suffering dementia? Is it schizophrenia? As you mentioned last night, this is what this condition was looked at years ago as being. And in fact, it's not in many cases. It's something else entirely. So this is something like throwing a pebble in a pond. It sets up ripples, and the ripples can extend actually quite a long way. I also would wonder about the victims themselves. If they begin to practice many defensive techniques psychologically to deflect attention away from themselves onto friends, spouses, co-workers, children, whatever. Is that something that happens?
It really is. And, you know, the kids play a price. And sometimes, again, everybody else is seeing the problems begin to rise, and the person is like, nothing's happening. I didn't say that. I didn't yell. I didn't, you know. And
so there's a lot of denial about
it. Exactly. Uh-huh. I mean, especially, for example, we have a young couple that came to our house. This is a couple of years back. There was suspect about something wrong. She's 21. He's 22, 23, married less than a year. And we have a third generation individual shows up, and I saw what I saw when I thought, hey, there's a possibility here. So we sat down.
Mm-hmm.
We began to talk. 3 hours into the discussion, as the girl would talk, out of her mouth, overriding her speech would be male and other personalities that would throw something in.
Hmm.
It would shock her. The husband was shocked.
Mm-hmm.
This happened twice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so scary. And then we've seen both sides, Jeff, where the spouse becomes, you know, they want to learn about it. They want to help. They want to stick it out. They want to, you know, they want to be in there. We've seen that side. And I give a lot of credit to those that have done that. We've seen the other side where, even in the case of the federal officer and others, they can't handle it, and they have to pull away.
Yeah, I would imagine, stand in the face of something like this and try to deal with it would be just indescribably difficult, and it would take an extraordinary person to do that. This is not easy stuff. What about, you mentioned voice changes. What about inflections in the voice, changes in cadence, very quick, almost instantaneous changes in mood and attitude and use of language and basic respect and stuff like that?
Well, sure, because you might, again, have a person who's there and co-conscious, and they know what this means in the whole world of SRA and PD, other personalities that are right there. I mean, they're at the tip of the tongue. So when spouses or others are engaging them in discussion, it may not be them, let's just say, like the one we knew, Mary. It may not be Mary that responds, but Mary's protector and others are right there, and right over, like I mentioned, this young girl, overriding them, just a quick little phrase, a quick little word, an in and out switch that happens so quick, that sometimes it surprises the person, or they get surprised by, you know, I don't know why, like, for example, a main person all of a sudden has deep angry feelings or very depressed feelings or whatever else, and they don't know where it's coming from. It may be coming from the subpersonality who is surfacing, carrying those feelings, but infecting the main person with those feelings. That's why this is complex.
And that subpersonality, as you mentioned last night, is called the protector personality, whichever personality it happens to be. But there will be a protector personality there to try to ward off any probing into the RSA multiple survivor by anybody who's trying to help, correct? It's a guardian, as it were.
Sure. They're there to make sure that everything inside, I mean, they're created with that program job to keep everything inside inside.
It just sounds like a movie. It sounds like it can't be real. And yet, when someone, a little boy or a little girl, is violated and put through this whole RSA thing, they have to, I mean, apparently with each rape or each violation, a variant personality is formed, to put it mildly. And then a whole lifetime goes by, 20, 30, 40 years, and this person has lived with repressed, what words could you use? Anger, humiliation, rage, and all of that rage and anger certainly, logically, would have to come out sooner or later at somebody or something, whether it be a job or another person or another life situation. There's rage that is probably off the scale, buried within most of these poor victims.
Absolutely. And dangerous rage at that, and dangerous. I mean, the protector and others inside, I mean, they can badly harm others that need to be taken out of the way, that need to be kept away from, finding out anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you think in terms of, you got six people and you think you're engaging one and you're dealing with one, and then the others around, they get mad at what you say and they want to enter in and they want to, you know, some want to fight, some, you know, you're really dealing with alter sub persons that have different will, different age, different mind, different history, different disposition, and many of them are coming out of pain because of the split in the first place, and out of confusion, and especially if they're programmed. Let alone, Jeff, if somebody with programmed subpersonalities sent one of these individuals in for the purpose of spying or harming another, or, you know, contaminating or recruiting or compromising, you know, sometimes that occurs too.
To try to approach someone with this concept, at least initially, before there's any bleed through or breakdown of the programming, I would imagine would cause a violent rejection of even the subject. Are you crazy? There's nothing wrong with me. That's impossible. I would know. I'm sure you've heard it all.
Exactly. Yeah, we've seen that. And when, you know, finally somebody's trying to really, it's almost beyond like an alcoholic, I don't have a problem, or a drug addict, I don't have a problem, or a gambler, I don't have a problem. It's beyond that issue, because you've got the imposition of programming that includes making the person amnesic, that they're not supposed to know. The outside folks they've wired them not to know. And so to begin to know goes against everything they've been wired. They're supposed to be controlled and undetectable.
The idea that somebody would harm a person who is trying to help is something that you've come across in your work too over 30 years. I'm sure you mentioned the violence. You mentioned the race. There's something called hysterical strength that people, when they become hyper charged, can use. They become incredibly strong, and I'm sure that in these cases, that is something that is a potential as well. When you've got four or five alters pushing each other for the stage, so to speak, and one or two of them happen to be angry in their basic dispositions, and I'm not an expert in this field, but I would think that could be a recipe for a combustion of anger and physical violence that could be catastrophic.
Absolutely. That it's just there. And And Jeff, all the way around, it's the victimization and what, this is not normal. This is, human beings aren't meant to be twisted, torn inside, or have somebody controlling, this is not meant to be. It's not a natural thing to the human soul or spirit or their physical mind, emotion.
Right.
This is not supposed to be, let alone anybody being raped or harmed in that sense once or twice or 10 times. This is something like, 500 times, 700 times by the time there's, 13 and 14. So there's just so many memories of the abuse, and so much of it is to keep them down. So inside, rage is in there, and anger, is in there. And then I will say again, because everybody out there that's worked in the field knows, there is also the strength supernaturally of other, demonic presence, real entities that have been involved in the satanic side. And, we've engaged that hundreds of times.
Mm-hmm.
We've had psychiatrists and, law enforcement agents and, teachers and parents sit in the room to see what it is we've seen so many times. I don't want to just tell them about it. I want them to be in there, and I say, well, if it's really there and we're really going to deal with it, you will see what I have seen so many times. And tell you what, that changes somebody that once was a skeptic. Once they see that, let alone the subparts begin to talk, they're astounded at first and they're freaked out at first. They have to think through whether they want to know more, whether they want to learn how to help or run.
The voice changes again, and you've probably seen it all, but the movie The Exorcist, I guess people, I've read a little bit about this again since we started doing these things, people will growl, they'll roar, their voice will change, go into an adult voice, a teenage voice, a child, all kinds of different things can pour out, just issue forth from someone who has put through this meat grinder, and you mentioned that the violations aren't just 5 or 10. There can be hundreds and hundreds of them, and maybe more.
Sure.
And as children.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we can understand a little bit better today about human trafficking and kids that are being used, and sexually they're used 6 times a day and month after month. And so we know they have gone through horrific slavitude to forced, sexual actions and so forth again and again and again. Well, that plus the demonization, plus the actual splitting, plus programming, all of that is just complicating it. I mean, again, it's by design, though. It is by design by those who know how to use this. And
in the case of a spouse, say a woman's married to a man who's had this done, or vice versa, it doesn't matter. And they're around that spouse all the time, and that spouse is their partner, their life partner. After a while, it seems to me that one of two things might happen. The spouse begins to think that the victim behavior is normal. They lose sight of what's normal in life. They start to think that, this is the way people are. All these different personalities, subtypes, and quick mood changes, and you name it. So they lose touch with their reality, in some cases. I don't know how they couldn't.
Exactly. And especially if in the beginning they're diagnosed just bipolar or with a lesser diagnosis and or PTSD, they're diagnosed with a post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
They have some other kind of anxiety disorder, and it's not really getting to what's really there, because the truth is,
right,
for example, again, I'm dealing with a guy. I've already talked with a number of personalities inside, engaged a lot. He's seeing a counselor, a psychiatrist. So I ask him one day, I ask this guy, we'll call him Mark. I said, Mark, why doesn't Steve, that's a real subperson, or I named some of the others, why don't they tell this doctor who you come out and like you're doing with me, talk to him. And Steve pops up and says, Russ, he won't believe it anyway, and he won't know what to do with this. We have another psychiatric ward up here, same thing with the federal officer's wife. She goes to a major, well-known psychiatric unit here in Cleveland, Ohio, and the psychiatrist calls me, and I tell him things. He literally feared talking with the subpersons. He didn't know what would happen. So it has a lot to do with the counselor's diagnosis, and you're right. You can have other people give wrong diagnosis or a lesser diagnosis, and yet it's far more than that. And then again, the spouse and others just perceive, oh, they're into their bipolar. Oh, they're into their anxiety disorder. Oh,
right,
they're,
right.
You know,
yeah,
sure.
Exactly. And the spouse, the non-SRA victim, over time begins to become, I would think, somewhat distance from what a normal personality would be like. They're living with someone who is essentially unusual. Let's just be charitable like that.
Yeah.
And their lives become contaminated as well.
Sure, because they've got to adjust. It actually becomes a major control thing because they know they're like walking on eggshells. They don't know, you know, they're afraid. They've learned over time certain things. Well, I better not say that. I better not do this. I better not put this over here. I better not.
Because the SRA victim will, in fact, assume virtually total control because the person trying to help is so concerned and afraid of stepping on the wrong spot, pushing the wrong button, saying the wrong word. So they begin to live in complete. It's a tentative existence at best, let's put it that way.
Sure. And then they become the victim of this process in that sense, too. And here's another issue. Inside unhealed, undealt with multiples, there are, since they have parts inside that have persons that have been abused and have been spoken to and have been manipulated and have been controlled, just like in pedophilia, without a break-in, they begin to do the same things to other people. And so that begin, what was done to them begins to come out on the people that are around them. And either, here's what we've seen, either the persons around them, spouses and families and other people that get around, either they get pushed into almost a passivity and a silence and a real fear.
Right.
Or they fly. They leave. They get out because they can't handle it.
Understand. Bad situation and, all too common. Ladies and gentlemen, in this culture of ours, and I mean in Europe, here, around the world. We'll be right back with Russ in just a couple minutes as we continue our third conversation about this biggest secret. Okay, let's get back to our conversation with Russ Dizdar on SRA and multiples, ritual, satanic, sexual abuse, and multiple personality disorder, or DID as it's also known. The idea of an SRA victim and the alters or the subs that are lurking right around, usually there are several, I guess, from what I've learned from you, right, always near the obvious observable level of consciousness right there to interact with you. You never know which one is really there, but there can be a primary, but the others are right there, often, as you say, jockeying for position or trying to shove their way into a conversation and so forth. And you never really can tell. But the idea that these people become masters at projection onto their spouse, onto their co-workers or friends, of their own faults, deficiencies, defects, problems, obvious anguish. They project things onto those around them to put the people around them on the defensive, to take the attention away from being observed as being perhaps having been victimized by the cult. They're
sure.
Masters at projection. Have you run across a lot of this?
Sure, because that's one way to keep the, dissuade an individual from really seeing what's there. That, you know, simply to thrust back on the other person, you're the problem, this is what's going on. That's where they're there to create a lot of confusion, and that's where this concept of disinformation comes in and or denial comes in. And if they can simply throw off, you're the problem, I have none, Yeah, then it leaves the person that's observing everything mm-hmm. asking the question, what's wrong with me?
Yes.
And it really is that person.
That's what I was trying to get at earlier. And let's say we've got two best friends or whatever, a spouse and a husband and a wife, and the husband loves his wife and has realized that there's a problem. There are only so many things that dedication, devotion, understanding, kindness, patience, love, sensitivity, I guess, can achieve when trying to help someone who has been tragically ruined inside by the cult. All the love in the world, all the dedication in the world, isn't enough when you've got all of this anguish and grief and programming to deal with.
Exactly. And that's, yeah, and in the early days, Jeff, back in the earlier 80s, again, the first case of that little 13-year-old girl in the psych ward, you know, I had no idea. I mean, I dealt with demonic stuff before and, mm-hmm. and depression and counseling people. And mm-hmm. But what we began to see and then learning, I mean, we had to learn the hard way, and which would, you know, and when I say cost us physically, I mean, there's all kinds of things that come into this.
Yes.
As you know, we've mentioned already. So we just continue to pursue it. We felt led by God to do so. And over time, and dealing with so many victims and doing it again and doing it again, and then talking to those who want to be healed. And so that's how we have observed and seen, and it gave us a lot of, historical experience in, mm-hmm. in dealing with it. And it, you know, that's now that we approach it, now when we engage, you know, we know what we're looking at more now than before.
Right.
And we know some of the games that go on. I mean, there's personalities inside that are only supposed to, you know, keep a person away from anybody that would find out, anybody that's going to know. I mean, that's their job.
Or to keep the spouse completely off balance,
sure.
and thinking it's their fault, or at least trying to. And then when the spouse, or best friend or colleague would object, then there's a war. Because they play for
keeps.
And they'll live a very,
I mean, pretty soon the spouse begins to find out that the MPD, they got a secret life that's been going on. They're really able to run this secret life to where sub-personalities take, you know, I'm going to the store. They didn't go to the store. I've got a doctor's appointment uh-huh. over here on the other side of town. I'm going to Sally's house. And a sub-person then goes and meets people and meets coven people and does other things.
And they don't always, that I would imagine doesn't always have to be the case, but that certainly can be the case. They also, these people who are victims will go to a psychologist or even a psychiatrist, and one of the personalities will present and completely run the psychologist or therapist down the wrong road and have them completely molded and conned into thinking that there's a whole different set of circumstances at work. And,
Exactly. And again, not all psychologists and counselors and we've met quite a few over the years.
They've
not been trained either.
No.
I mean, this was a new thing to them. They had to change their own diagnostic manual twice. And even their ability on a corporate level to say, well, because this involves the spiritual element, the physical element, mm-hmm. mind control programming. So unless a person has gotten into understanding it and really is applied, mm-hmm. I don't know how. I mean, it's one thing just to love somebody. And that's what's needed. But to how to really help them and understand what they are and who they are, you know, you just need to have, we need the understanding. We need to learn. And, mm-hmm. and this has helped, you know, the spouses of victims, once they begin to read, once they begin to learn, once they begin to see what it is, that's why I say, you know, on one side, then they begin to become the heroes in the sense that they'll pay the price. They're going to help. Healing is possible, if it's pursued. And, you know, If that understanding comes in, but sometimes the verbal and even physical abuse that they're getting is too much. And, you know, we've observed both where a spouse mm-hmm. just has to go and leave and they want nothing to do with it, or some that stay and try to fight and help.
For those of you listening to all this, the website, it is quite clear. And please do visit it. It's called shatterthedarkness.net. Just click on Russ's name and guests at rents.com and go there and start reading. His book, The Black Awakening, is there. There's a lot to read and learn from. Shatter the Darkness, of course, is there as well. The idea that that this exists is frightening. Some, I would imagine, some of the SRA victims will know that something strange happened to them as a young boy or a young girl. Some of them will have recollections of having experienced multiples in a circumstance earlier in life, and they'll know of that. Multiples don't just happen. This is something that I think is a key indicator that there's something profoundly wrong, and that in and of itself is enough to drive people nutty, because it's not schizophrenia, it's something else. Okay, anything to add to that, Russ? We're gonna go through the break here. I know you heard the music, but we'll just go ahead. Anything you want to add to that?
Well, yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, that's why, again, anybody that, you know, at least, you know, I suggest for everybody to read some materials. Years ago, we went to a mind control conference in Richmond, Virginia. One of the people there was a man that wrote a book called Breaking the Circles of Satanic Ritual Abuse. Now, this was this is a survivor that goes by a pseudonym. Now, we met him and talked with him. He wrote it for counselors. He wrote it for them to understand what the victims go through. And it's a good book in the sense of a survivor trying to tell counselors and social workers and others, this is what I went through, this is what we've been through, and try to explain the depths of it. And that he did a good job in that sense of trying to help people understand. So education on the subject, I look to my left here where I'm at my research center, you know, there's a few thousand books. You don't have to do that. You can read a few and begin to see some of the factors that are out there. The mystery of, I think it's one's called Uncovering the Mystery of NPD, written back in the 90s. That was a groundbreaking book back then. Nobody else had written anything like that. So the education on our part is needed. I'll say again very strongly, it's not because the victim is nuts, crazy, insane, even though it may seem like they act like that because they don't know what's going on in the beginning, and they need a lot of help. So the violence that went on, and here's the truth: the victimization continues because look at what they're caught in. Look at the damage that has not been undone yet.
Well, they do feel like they're victims, and in fact, they are victims. But that can extrapolate and spread throughout almost every facet of life, I would think. I'm a victim. Oh, I'm a victim.
Sure, and especially if the inside parts never get help. I mean, you got inside personalities who've been raped, sexually abused, held down, abused, gruesome emotional things done to them, things that really just tear them to pieces. And so if they show anger, Jeff, in the coven, in the cult, they're not allowed to show anger. That is the rule. You ask any of the victims, they're not allowed to show anger inside there. If they show anger, they could be punished heavily. So where's all of that?
The anger goes out onto the spouse, the colleague, the friends in the home.
Like a teapot. You know, when it heats up, it's what's in there will come out then. Yeah.
And a spouse, a partner who stands as firmly as possible in the face of this over a long period of time, you must have seen some extraordinarily heroic things. People trying, at least.
Sure. Yeah, we know a number of counselors in different places that have worked, you know, 10, 20 years. We know spouses. I have a very close friend right here in Akron. Well, I have that little 13-year-old girl. He married this girl later. Now, she's in her 30s now. And, you know, when they first met years ago, I mean, he has had a lot to deal with. I mean, personalities coming out saying, I hate, you know, cussing him out. I don't love you. I don't like you. I didn't marry you. Those are the kind of things when it's breaking open more and more, let alone In right. other cases yeah. where it's just beginning. And,
horribly destructive language, just crushingly destructive language, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. All right, let's pull back and look at the big picture. This is not something that is just present in these formerly United States. How widespread is it, Russ?
Sure, over the years, and this has been through the late 90s and now in the last decade, the big search has been looking everywhere else. And so now the victims and the books about them and the counselors and the pastors and the workers from Australia, from Canada, New Zealand, Ireland, England, Wales, France, Italy, all through the Vatican, Germany, PACT, and now we've been for the last 8 months really focusing on Russia, and here comes the stories out of Russia. So, and even Johannesburg, you know, South Africa. Now that's why the big question has to be asked, because it's one thing to see some of the abuse and some of this. What's the ultimate purpose and why? How could this be if it's created by others, abusers?
Mm-hmm.
Then how could it be in Argentina and Paraguay and in South Africa and in Germany and throughout the Vatican and
exactly.
Canada's PAC?
Exactly.
How could there be so many?
My sense has been for some time that this is in origin and at the point of practice, not a human issue. It's multidimensional, other dimensional. Other planet, who know, we don't know, but it's not a basic, little babies are not born with this, not to my knowledge. If they are, I would suggest it's rare. I don't think it's a gene. I think there's some other evil on this planet. You can call it satanic if we want, I guess, but you're suggesting something that is of a superhuman, nature, aren't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the origin. I mean, in our perspective and what we've dealt with, when you say satanic ritual abuse, whether anybody, and this is what they used to say in law enforcement, one of the guys would say this in the academy, he'd say to all the rest of the law enforcement people, even if you don't believe in God or you don't believe in Satan, please understand the people that are perpetrating the satanic crimes do. That's their motivation. Now, in our case, we know that it's real. We've engaged the supernatural side of it. So when we do act this all back and keep tracking backwards with all of it, it does have satanic origin. There are deep underground satanic rituals. There's what's called twilight languages that come out of these individuals from deep within. In most of them, in the inside, there are priestesses who can summon, speak ancient languages. They're versed in meticulous ritual setup as far as the drawings, the circle, the pentagrams,
wow.
the languages, all
wow.
that's there.
Wow. Wow. I remember someone telling me they worked, lived in Santa Barbara for a long time, and Montecito is a very wealthy area, and they are house cleaners. They clean mansions and very wealthy estates. And they said in one of them they were cleaning the rug in this large living room, very large living room, and they rolled the rug back. It was like an oriental carpet. And they said under the rug was this most elaborate, ornate, satanic drawing they had ever seen. And they said it obviously the house felt crummy to begin with, but when they saw that they quit. They stopped working there. They wouldn't go back. Okay. What is your guidance to someone beside going to your website, shatterthedarkness.net and picking up books to someone, head of household, whatever, spouse who has an issue to deal with like this, who really doesn't have the skills but has the basic awareness of what the problem is? What can that person do?
Well, in the beginnings, they're gonna have to have a couple of things. Education to understand, to really begin to look at what this is all about. They're gonna have to draw the boundary, a circle around them. They're gonna have to say, I can take so much, but I'm not gonna be turned into a pincushion. I'm not gonna become the
punching bag, whipping boy. I got it.
Exactly.
And they tend to be bullies, don't they?
Well, yes, and controlling, because again, inside parts, this is what was done to them. Controlling.
Total control. Total control.
All that was done. And so for the anybody dealing with somebody that's still, you know, trapped in it, intact and so forth, but feeling the victimization of it on themselves, well, you've got to draw a circle to say, you know, boundaries. You got to get outside of this to some others that know, to where you can, you know, instead of talking to the, you know, the MPD, the multiple, you need to get out to be able to talk to somebody else about it. And somebody that's versed. So education, personal self-protection, and finding outside allies, you know, concerning all of this, so that, you know, that's where you can begin to let off some, you know, and you need to be able to talk to somebody else other than being yelled at or, you know, things happening, you know.
Constantly put down, constantly berated, constantly accused of betrayal. Accused of lying, accused of all the negatives of the human existence, to be kept in a position of weakness, of being subjugated all the time. That would be the goal, I would think, of someone who is after total control.
Well, exactly. I mean, exactly. Otherwise, you know, you become, I mean, and again, just becoming the stepping stone or the pincushion doesn't heal the person, doesn't help the person any longer.
Love isn't enough to do the job.
I mean, well, love also has to draw a line at times. Even when a parent has a young, you know,
well, they call it tough love. Sure.
Well, there is. There's times you have to say no, no illegal drugs into the home. You can't bring, you know, this. You know, you can't. There's certain things you cannot do, and it's not wrong to say that. It's not wrong to have those boundaries. Otherwise, you know. You can be stolen from and taken from and set up and harmed and used, and then you become the victim and you can't take it any longer. So education, self-protection in all of this, find outside allies in this and decide what you know. And if a person's like, you know, they're never going to get help or I'm never going to go that direct, that's where the assessment has to be done. We've got some that have come to us that we've spent hours and hours and weeks and coming down to the point where inside of them, in some cases, Jeff, there's been some saying to us face to face, we're not giving up our powers. We're not giving up the coven. We're not giving up what we've been made to be. And sadly, there's been departure on that side of the fence, numbers of times.
So within this victim, this SRA victim, this multiple victim, there is a multiplicity of aches for security, for fulfillment, a wish to be normal, and that often manifests itself, and correct me if I'm wrong, as an all-out war for total control of either a spouse, a friend, a job, an occupation, a household, whatever. There would seem to me to be a need for that person to feel empowered because they've been made to feel so weak and so violated literally for their entire lives because they're not in control of themselves after having been hideously ravaged as a young person. Is that
and sure? Sure. Yeah. And they will project, as you said earlier. I mean, when you have unhealed individuals, when they begin to see another person who would never harm them, but show the slightest type of demeanor, to where they then would throw out a projection, you're an abuser, or you're good, and
they then reverse it. I got it.
It is. It's a projection from their point, and they're projecting on the spouse or on the other person or on the helper. Complexity. I mean, listen, Jeff, in all of this, we need prayer. We need to, you know, we need supernatural help. We need, it's possible. That's the good news. We've seen the help. We've seen what God can do in a life. We've seen this, but we've also seen the battle, the struggle, have been struck, injured, things broken, attacks in every possible way verbally. And, you know, you don't, I mean, we've learned you don't have to, you don't take it, you know, you don't have to take it personally. I mean, but you can also set those boundaries to say, like sometimes in the old days, we would spend up to 7 hours in engaging a person when, and spirits and the personalities. And we learn now that we can just say, listen, come in, we'll work for an hour and a half. We're not going to let them control and wear everybody out to the point where everybody's, even the victim themselves get wear out. So we just learned that we don't have to do it that way. In the old days, we did it. And nowadays we won't, and we'll keep coming, we'll keep meeting. As long as they want to pursue the healing, pursue the help, pursue all of it, then we will stay committed. And progress can be made.
The idea of attacking someone who is trying to help is probably one of the saddest things I would imagine you'd see. And of course, as you just said, the ritual satanic sex abuse MPD victim will break things that the other person cares about to try to harm them. There are many things that that they'll do to try to break that person down and force them to comply and be controlled.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of my staff guys loves to hear the story. When we were in Meadville, Pennsylvania, an officer brought me there. We're talking to a victim. They had been to a psychiatrist in Youngstown. They got the okay to get their kids back because all the kids were sexually abused. They showed me a map of the inside, and I said, well, let me talk to this one. And this personality came up. And then I looked at another one. The name was Darkstar. I said, let me talk to Darkstar. And this other personality said, no, Russ, you don't want to talk to Dark. I said, no, I want to talk to Darkstar. This is a woman, 6'6", standing. I'm sitting on the couch. The guys have an officer has a video camera. And the next thing I know, Darkstar comes up and clocks me in the face before I could even turn my face back the other way, got me a second time, tried for a third, but we had to stop them. And because it's a woman's body, we just had to kind of, hey, sit down here on the couch. And boy, was this personality aggressive and ready to fight. It was instant.
Yeah.
That's how it worked.
You've seen an awful lot. Russ, Dizdar, I can't thank you enough for sharing all of this with people who are, obviously in need of guidance and hope. They're out there all over the world right now, as we know. This is something that is, a very big and growing problem. And it goes, as you said in the beginning, multi-generations. It's not just a one-off deal. In most cases. Thank you, Russ, very much on behalf of untold people out there who appreciate and need you to keep doing what you're doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
All right.
God bless.
Good night.
Good night.
Russ Dizdar. And again, shatterthedarkness.net. And we'll be back.